Well, that was unpleasant, the end of that last segment. I recognize that on GCN, because there are so many conspiracy advocates, and most conspiracy advocates tend to move towards hating and blaming Jews for all things. It's not all of them, but a disproportionate number of conspiracy advocates find a utter disdain for Jews and Israel, and like to blame both. Also, there's a lot of Christian wackos on GCN. And Christianity has been opposed to Jews and Israel since its conception as a religion, mostly as a result of Paul's letters, but it also grew out of the anti-Yahuda culture of Rome and Greece. And there are now some atheists that actually have shows on GCN. Atheism is a very difficult position to hold without enormous faith. And typically, atheists tend to oppose God. It's not just that they say there is no God. They want to oppose God. And if you're going to effectively oppose God, you have to be opposed to his witness and his witnesses, which would be Yisrael and Yisraelites. Now that, unfortunately, puts you into a position where you have to disregard and disrespect the ancient world's most magnificent document, the Torah. And it puts you in a position where you have to be opposed to the only civilized nation in the Middle East. And it puts you in a position where you must embrace the most repulsive people in the world today. But those who are atheists who present themselves as driven by evidence and reason will disregard all of that to advance their faith in their opposition to God. Now, I mentioned Paul, and we're going to turn to Paul now that we're in the third hour of the program. He was talking about receiving a private revelation. Now, yesterday I explained that God didn't give a private revelation to anyone, ever. That Yahweh, when he provides a revelation, he does it for the express purpose of it being public. That's why you read what he had to say in Yeshayah, in Yirmiyah, in Zechariah. He speaks publicly, doesn't speak privately. There is no case of Yahweh saying, you know what I think I'm going to do here is that just for giggles, I'm going to go to this fellow Mortimer, and I'm going to tell Mortimer all the really cool inside Misto stuff. And I'm going to tell Mortimer that you can't tell anybody about our meeting or what I told you. But Mort, it's all up to you if you want to write some letters to folks and promote a Mortimerology. That's just not what he does. And when you see things that are completely inconsistent with Yahweh's testimony and experience, actions over, well, really over now 6,000 years, it's obvious to see those things which are the sore thumbs, which don't fit. Now, that's half of it. The other half of it is that Paul never once cites anything that he claims he was told. Never once. Never says, I was told blah, blah, blah. Yahweh told me ABC. Never once reveals a single line that was allegedly revealed to him in this secret revelation. Yeah, so we're going to discount it as reason. Didn't happen. Now, third, if you read Paul's own testimony in Galatians, his first letter, and the history of Paul's mission, if you want to call it, as it's recorded by his attaché, Luke, his claim that he went to Arabia for 3 years to get the information dump is preposterous. It is completely and totally in conflict with Galatians, which is where he presents it, and also with Acts and with what we know through history. It didn't happen. It's a demonstrable lie. All right. Those things being the case, Paul lied. But his fixation on unverifiable secret revelations on mystery and mythology was very common among Romans and among Greeks. And it was further advanced in his letter to the Ephesians, which was the epitome of Greek religious and philosophical thought at the time. When according to, as it's recorded in the New American Standard Bible, he wrote, "If indeed you have heard of the stewardship of God's grace," God does not have grace. He has mercy, no grace, "which was given to me for you," which was given to me for you. So he is stating here that God's, we'll use the correct term, mercy. He used the grace, which was the name of the pagan Roman goddesses modeled after the pagan Greek charities. But think of this. So what he's saying here is that he's the Savior. He's the intermediary. It's not that Yahweh was merciful, so he provided Yahusha for the purpose of being a intermediary to provide Yahweh's mercy to us, which really isn't accurate because Yahusha is a diminished corporeal manifestation of Yahweh. So just really an extension of Yahweh set apart from him. But here Paul is saying that he's the intermediary, that God's, whether you want to use grace or mercy, be accurate or inaccurate, was given to Paul for you and me. That he is the conduit by which God's forgiveness, God's mercy have been offered. Not the Torah, not Moshe, not Dod, not Yosha, not no one, which is the correct answer to this, other than Yahweh himself, but Paul, given to me for you. Now, if you were an informed, rational person, and you read that in Ephesians, "For indeed you have heard of the stewardship of God's grace, which was given to me for you," you would take that person and if that wasn't Yahusha speaking, and in Yahusha's case, so long as you knew what his name meant, that it's Yahweh saving us, so long as you understood what he said of himself, that he is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, then you would just say, well, this just, you know, the means that Yahweh is using to himself provide mercy directly to us, no intermediary. But when a man who is a scumbag makes this claim, and you do not reject him as presumptuous, as egotistical, as disingenuous, as dishonest, as manipulative, then you're not thinking. Now, I understand in religion, people don't like to think. But for God's sake, it's your soul. Think. It is absolutely impossible that God's grace was given to Paul for anyone. Impossible. It's not how God operates. Paul is not our Savior. He was not an intermediary. And Paul's interpretation, his presentation of grace, is completely inconsistent with Yahweh's presentation of Chanan mercy. Completely. "That by revelation there was made known to me the mystery, as I wrote before in brief. So what he's talking about here is he's acknowledging that he has written a number of letters, and that now he is talking about this mystery that was made known to him. Now, I'm here to tell you, when Yahweh revealed his Torah to Moshe, he ended any mystery. Full declaration. Here's who I am. My name is Yahweh. I am the creator of the universe. Here's how I created the universe. Here's when I created the universe. Here's why I created the universe. Here is my covenant. And I'm going to explain every detail to you of this covenant and its purpose, its terms and conditions, its benefits. Everything disclosed, no mystery whatsoever, very plain discussion. And then here is how I am honoring that covenant by freeing my children, the children of Yisrael, from Mitzrayim, the crucible of human oppression. Removing them from it, just as I asked Abraham to leave Babylon. I'm asking and helping my children, walking with my children, leading my children away from Egypt. And that Exodus is based entirely on the presentation of the first four Mikra. These invitations to be called out and to meet with God. Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah. All played out in human history. And then in the next book of that Torah, to describe the purpose and the timing and all the symbolism associated with this path from the world of human politics and militarism and economic schemes and religious integration into society, that the path from all of that to living with God is laid out before our eyes in the book named after the Mikra, Kara, the invitations to meet. It's all presented there for you. And then on top of that, Moshe, at the end of it all, says, here's what God told you. Here's what's important. This is what it means. There are no mysteries. So Paul, in his letter to Ephesus, which was a Greek community that was extraordinarily enveloped in Greek philosophy, Roman philosophy, and Greek and Roman religiosity. And in the Greek religion, particularly as embraced by Rome, the mystery aspect, the founder receiving a mystery insight that they would tease the initiate with, where they would gradually, as the person became more devoted to their cult, this is true today in Freemasonry, for example, they would gradually tell them more and more, luring them in with something that seemed plausible, but by the time you get to the end, what you really got is horrible, but you are so indoctrinated and so threatened at that point by and so impressed with your growth through the organization, positions of influence, that you just don't divulge the mystery anymore, even though the mystery is pathetic and revolting. But in Yahweh's case, that's just not the way that he rules. He's the antithesis of religion. A great example would be that almost every time that someone asked Yahusha a question, his first response is, why are you troubling me with that? Why are you even bothering me with that? What are you, a complete idiot? You see, if you ask the question, haven't you read the Torah? Why don't you go to the Torah, and what does the Torah say? No, the question was answered there. What does the Torah and prophets say in this regard? The answers are there. You don't need to ask me this question. Are you just lazy? And so his response was universally, The answers are in the Torah and the prophets. You don't need to be answering me. You shouldn't be answering me these questions. When Nicodemus is shown coming to Yahushua and saying, no, we know you're, you know, of God and you're doing some marvelous stuff here, but, you know, I really need to know, how do I get to heaven? And he didn't say, you know, bless you, child, for you have come and searched for the truth. Oh, what a marvelous question. I'm so pleased that you asked me that question. He says, what's wrong with you? You're a teacher of the Torah, for crying out loud. How could you ask me that question? It's his response all the time. God laid out the answers. No mystery. You want to participate in the covenant? There's five conditions. Have at them. You want to be saved? Participate in the covenant. You want to know the path that you walk from our polluted world to God's? Read Kara. It's been corrupted to Leviticus, but it's all there. No mystery. God explained how he created the universe, when he created the universe, why he created the universe. He tells you what he wants. He tells you what he's offering. It's all laid out before us. No mystery. Now, I will tell you that if you focus on what he has to say, if you really want to know what he has to say, if you're interested in getting to know him and engaging in a relationship with him, there are lots of insights that are provided to the earnest, honest, open searcher along the way. But it's a huge difference in having being enlightened and receiving insights from studying Yahweh's testimony and getting a special, exclusive information release that somehow is a mystery. Not even comparable. So, here we go. If indeed you have heard of the stewardship of God's grace, which was given to me, that by revelation there was made known to me the mystery, as I wrote before in brief. And by referring to this, when you read, you can understand my insight into the mystery of Christ. Mystery. Completely debunked the idea that he was mysterious. Completely. He was as straightforward as they come. I'm Torah observant. I came to fulfill the Torah. Do not think that I came to in any way annul or disregard the Torah. You want the answer? Read the Torah. No mystery. He says, I walked out of the pages of the prophets. I am the diminished manifestation of Yahweh. No mystery. You don't need insight into the mystery of Christ, because A, there is no Christ, and 2, there is no mystery. Paul was lying. So Paul, in his letter to the Ephesians, also speaking about this secret mystery revelation, which is completely incompatible with Yahweh's nature, with Yahweh's open and written testimony. We're constantly telling his prophets, write this down. Write this down on a scroll. Convey this to the people. Completely and totally incompatible. And so now is an insight into the mystery of Christ. Now, you know, if Yahushua said, you know, I know this is really mysterious, and so God, I need somebody to explain this to me. You think that maybe, just maybe, that Yahochanan and Shimon Kefesh and Jacob and Matanyah, do you think that maybe that among the 12 disciples over those 3 years that just maybe he would have said, here's the secret inside scoop? But what are the odds? He says, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody anything about this. That all those references to in the Torah and prophets to who I am and why I'm here, I mean, I am never going to to affirm that any of that is about me. I know that my first public declaration was walking into that synagogue on a Shabbat and opening the scroll of Isaiah to the very passage that announces the approaching Yobel, and that I am the living manifestation of what the prophet was describing here. I know I did that, but that was just a slip up. I know that I answered everyone's question by pointing them to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, but, you know, nobody's perfect. I know that I never once directed any of the 12 disciples to write down anything about me, including this mystery stuff. So what do you think the odds are that I'm rejecting all of them and didn't tell them anything? That whole disciple thing was just all for giggles. I don't know why I call them disciples. I mean, that's those who were taught. I didn't teach them anything. And that apostle thing that I called them, that could have been true. That's ones who's prepared to be sent out. That's a misnomer. You got me there. I'm screwing up. So what I really need is the least articulate guy that I can find. Somebody that writes really poorly. Somebody that's egotistical and mean-spirited. I'm going to have a special meeting with him. I'm going to tell him the great mystery. Now, he's not going to tell anybody what I told him, but he's going to create a religion which he claims is his interpretation of this great mystery that I gave him. And that's this fellow Paul over here. He's going to contradict everything I said, everything I did. Never going to quote me once. He's going to annul the very Torah that I affirmed, that I observed. But that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. It's so ridiculous. Folks, it is so absurd. Shame on you if you're a Christian. Shame on you. You're just not thinking. It's preposterous. And if the stewardship of the grace which was given to me for you is his answer, that God's mercy was given to Paul for us, why even bother with this Christo fellow? How can there be a mystery of Christo that's even pertinent if God's mercy was given to Paul for us? Huh? Think it through. And of course, there is no Christ. No one named Christ. Title is completely bogus. And it wasn't here, ha, Christ, ha, Christo, or any tov, or any of the Greek definite articles. It wasn't used here as a title. It was used here as a name. Now, there is a name used 22 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, Messiah. The name, if you're going to use it without the definite article, there is a name used 22 times. Messiah means the work of Yahweh. But the work of Yahweh is Yahusha. And when you know his title as the work of Yahweh, and you know his name as Yahweh saves, there is no mystery. It's all answered. And you also realize that everything that Paul wrote and said is the antithesis of what that name and title means. He would go on to say, after the mystery of Christ, which in other generations was not made known to the sons of men, as it now has been revealed to his holy apostles and prophets in the spirit, of which I was made a minister, to preach to the Gentiles the unfathomable riches of Christ, to bring to light what is the administration of the mystery which for ages has been hidden in God who created all things. Well, beyond the fact that it's poorly written. Why did God bother? I mean, if you were a Christian, ask yourself, for crying out loud, why did God bother with the Torah, the prophets, and the Psalms to reveal all history from the inception of the universe to its demise? His entire plan for humankind. His interactions with humankind, past, present, and future. Right down to the smallest details of what we were going to do in our immediate future, as well as those meaningful engagements in our past. Why did he bother with it if he's saying, I just kept it a secret? No, not going to let it be known. Why, if what Paul is saying is true, why even did Yahusha keep from sharing the secret? Because he's now saying that this secret was given to him, which means that it wasn't given through Yahusha. Yahusha had the chance to speak to folks. He had the chance to interact with his disciples, but he didn't bother to share it. It was after he's gone, now it's Paul's. That's preposterous. Hey, God had laid out a whole plan and then negated the entire plan because he had a secret. And the best way to keep the secret was to disregard everything he had previously said. Let me tell you something. If somebody tells you a secret that annuls everything they've ever said before, you ought not believe it. And if they tell you a secret and say, you're the only one I'm giving a secret to, you can now tell people this secret, why don't you ask him, and why didn't you bother? You said you had a relationship with Adam and with Noah, that you had a relationship with Moshe and the children of Yisrael, and you had a relationship with Doe to David, and you had all of these interactions with your people. All of this revelation through Yahshayah and Zechariah and Yirmiyah, and you're telling me that with all of that, thousands of pages of revelation, that you never, ever bothered to tell people what was important? That all of that was just immaterial? And this is so preposterous, so utterly ridiculous. The fact that the world's most popular religion is based on this malarkey proves that Satan was right. That men are extraordinarily easy to deceive. Hello, Kirk. Am I making too much of this, or is it as obvious as these words seem to appear?
It's extraordinarily obvious if you take the time to think it through. As you were speaking, I was writing down some things. You know, my theme is more times than not is Yahweh's name, and you know, we had already talked about rabbis wiping out his name, but everything right. You said is revealed openly in his name to begin with. And I'm just going to, if I can take a second,
please,
I'll just point out a couple of things.
Please, please.
If you take the three letters in his name, you've got the Yod, of course, and what that means, his arm and his hand, and his authority and power to work, and then I'll conclude something in a second. You've got the hey twice, obviously, at the end. I think you pointed out that the end, when you use a hey at the end, is feminine, but it means right. Man reaching up, a man or woman reaching up. It means to reveal, to observe. To notice, behold mm-hmm. greatness.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the wa, which is the secure tent tag, to secure, to increase, and to add. And mm-hmm. the wa is to is also to add, another way to say
and
it.
To join.
And to join. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah,
now, if the rabbis, and God mm-hmm. never called a rabbi, Paul was a rabbi, he never called a rabbi in his life to talk about his words. He had the priest family dedicated to him, and that was the loi. The rabbi mm-hmm. was a Babylonian invention that took over the priesthood.
Yeah.
So, you know, number one, you ought to question that on anybody who has that kind of background.
Correct.
But if you thought about it, in the Torah story, mm-hmm. just in his name alone,
right.
You've got why we exist.
Mm-hmm.
We've got who the authority is.
Yes.
which is the author,
mm-hmm.
which is also Yahweh's motive, what he was creating us and the world for.
Yes.
Who will do the work, which is pertinent.
Yeah.
I think
he himself.
He's doing all the work. He didn't say little people down here have to go to work. Like
you know that in Hebrew, Yod, the first letter in Yahweh's name, which is the upper arm reaching down, the forearm reaching out with an open hand to us, that the Hebrew word Yod doesn't just mean hand. Mm-hmm. It means actions, influence, power, and authority.
Sure.
So it speaks of Yahweh's personal interactions, which is to lift up humankind by himself performing everything that was required to honor his Torah promises. It speaks of his authority to do so.
Yes.
And it also shows the hand in the position that a child would look at their father.
Sure.
Boy, it's a powerful way to start a name.
Uh-huh.
And is there any mystery to any of that?
It's not a, no. In fact, he wrote it out that way so even the dummies could figure it out if they couldn't read.
You're right. We'll be back with Kirk in a moment. Yahweh's name explains it all. No mystery. Like a father, he's reaching down and out to us with an open hand to lift us up. He tells us that's what he's doing. And you are correct that there's an interesting insight with the second and last letter of his name.
Yes, sir.
You define it correctly. It means to behold, to notice. To look up, to reach up. Yeah, reach up. So it is a term that describes observation. Pay attention. If you want guidance, look to your father. If you want to have help being lifted up, reach up to your father. It shows a person that's standing up, not bowing down, and reaching up to God, looking up to God. Very descriptive. But there's two people.
Yes.
And when the hey is used at the end of a Hebrew word, it typically makes that word or name feminine. That's just Ben means son, Bena means daughter in Hebrew. Great example. And so the second individual, the standing up and reaching up, is Sarah. Yahweh is demonstrating the covenant here. This is Abraham and Sarah, the very people that he founded this family-oriented covenant with, to demonstrate that as men and women, as husbands and wives, as mothers and fathers, we're invited to celebrate and live within God's family. Oh, powerful,
yeah, and
powerful
and
images.
What you have said, and which I thought was also terrific about the five hands with the five conditions and of the covenant and the five benefits of the covenant. You know, I find it interesting that so many cultures, especially our own, we seal all our deals with a handshake.
Correct.
You know, at least we once did. Now we have to have a lawyer. But in the old days, we gave our word.
Yeah.
We sealed it with a handshake.
Yeah.
We took an action. That's an action. That's a. So I mean, this you can't.
Yes.
The whole point is this: is it is no way you could say that this.
It's a mystery.
Yours is a mystery of religion waiting to be unfolded by some church years later, especially one that's a rabbi.
Now I will, we'll tell you that, and you're a teacher, so you know this. That while it is not a mystery, Yahweh does not attempt to make it simplistic. If you want to know him, you've got to search through his testimony to get to know him. If you want to engage in a relationship with him, you've got to consider his guidance in that regard. But the more that you focus on what he has already said and he's committed to writing, the more insight you receive. There's a huge difference between studying something and learning and receiving the insights from your endeavor. And a mystery being resolved. There are no mysteries being resolved.
Nothing would be that interesting if it didn't have some depth to it. After a while, you just say, okay, that's fine.
Right. But there's a lifetime of learning here.
Yes.
A lifetime of discovery here. Yeah. And then as you even look at Yahusha's name, you have the same three letters we've already discussed, and you're adding to that the eye and the mouth. And the eye means the visual presence, a way to look on someone, a perspective to them. A means to understand is what the eye represents, and the mouth represents the word.
And nourishment.
And nourishment. I mean, just look at his name, and there's no mystery.
So you have to kill his name.
You have to kill his name. You're
correct. Have to kill his name, or you can't pull this stuff off, and then you can't have rabbinical Judaism, right. You can't have Christianity, you can't have Islam, and you can't even have secular humanism.
Correct. Yeah, you have to kill his name. That's why the third statement that he etched in stone was all about his name. And at its very core, if you just take every word at its most simplistic meaning, it's those who negate my name, I will not forgive.
So anyone who says that's not important, we can call him Jesus, and we can call him this, and we can call him whatever, they missed the whole point.
They missed everything. Yeah. I mean, Yahweh not only declares that Yahweh is his only name, but the first statement he etched in stone is if you exist with
other names.
Any god with any. By any other name, then you will cease to exist. Yeah, you're not mine. So, no, it's God is absolutely blunt about this, and he is serious about it, that he has only one name. And if you do not know his name, you do not use his name, you do not know him. Powerful. And even, as you say, the idea of there's five hands in Yahweh's name, that two on each of the people standing up and Yahweh's hand. And collectively, there are five terms and conditions to participate in the covenant and five benefits. He's really made it pretty simple for us. He's even modeled it, Kirk, as you know, after family, which is the most fundamental of human structures.